Thanks for downloading the Culture Club podcast. This week, my guests were the trumpeter Alison Balsam and the violinist Ray Chen. I'm Charlotte Green, and my first guest in the Culture Club this afternoon is the very talented violinist Ray Chen. Ray, you won first prize in the 2008 International Yehudi Menuhin Violin Competition. That must have been an enormous boost to your career, winning at such a young age.
Absolutely. Especially for musicians, young musicians who are looking for, let's say, a foot in the door and, you know, aren't lucky enough to, let's say, have contacts in the music world, competitions are a fantastic way, perhaps the only way, to make a career in today's kind of age.
Now, the competition is coming back to London next year for the first time in 10 years, I think, to mark the centenary of the birth of Yehudi Menuhin. Now, you're going to be playing quite a role in that competition, aren't you? Tell me about it. I think you're going to be the youngest ever juror.
That's right. Quite excited about that. Also a little bit intimidated, considering, you know, I've seen the names on the jury, and yeah, it'll be you know, a nice experience. I think I'll be trying very hard to be very, you know, serious and just, you know, because I mean it is a responsibility, despite, you know, like having fun. It's a heavy responsibility to have to really, I mean, you're nurturing the next generation
of course,
classical,
yes,
musicians. And that's to be on the other side, as relaxing as nice as that is, it's also a little bit, yeah, it's a little bit heavy, I think.
And this will involve analysing performances.
Yes, yes. I mean, and competitions, you know, the thing about competitions that is a bit tough, I think, is like you feel like you have to be critical. And you can't really just simply enjoy the performance, which is what, you know, we're all kind of, I mean, most people go to a performance to enjoy it, right? But when you're sitting on a jury, you kind of have to say, well, this was not good here and that was not good, and actually remember all of that, write down notes. And then the part where I dread the most is the meeting the competitors day, when they come up to you and say, well, why didn't I get through to the next round, or why didn't I win? And then that's going to be heartbreaking, because I remember asking those same questions as well.
That's tough, yes. I suppose the key is to be constructive in your criticism, isn't it? Not to be negative, but to make valid criticisms, but be constructive in the way.
Absolutely.
You put it.
I mean, yes, of course, to be constructive. But in that moment, if you've ever been in that moment, you would understand it's very difficult to not take it personally. You know, it's very difficult to kind of, yes, you accept those words, but you kind of, you're in this just absolute, you know. And they always say, oh, everyone's a winner at the end of the competition, but you certainly don't feel like that. You have to keep reminding yourself, and this is what I urge to remind all the competitors, is to think about the experience that you gain from entering such a competition like the Yehudi Menuhin. You gain experience in performing in front of a crowd of people. I mean, and not to mention the webcast, which is, you know, potential of millions, and just, you know, having that experience and also finding out what you can do to improve.
Yes.
Even if you do win, I mean, it's important to keep improving. And so as for that, yes, everyone's in the same boat, I think, entering the competition.
Magnificent musicianship. My guest, Ray Chen, playing the opening movement of Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto in E minor, accompanied by the Swedish Radio Symphony Orchestra under the baton of Daniel Harding. And Ray's one of the judges of the 2016 International Yehudi Menuhin Competition, as announced on Wednesday, and you can find out more about it at classicfm.com. Ray, you're going to be a busy man, aren't you? You're appearing as a juror, but you're also going to be performing at the opening concert.
Ah, yes, that's right. I'll be doing the Brahms Violin Concerto with Philharmonia Orchestra.
One of my favourite pieces. With the Philharmonia Orchestra.
Yeah, that's correct.
That should be a tremendous experience.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to that. Brahms Violin Concerto, I mean, is the epitome of violin concerto out there. And it's one of my absolute favorite pieces. It's very difficult. I consider it very difficult. I think it's interesting because a lot of people consider different concerti difficult according to when they learned it, I think.
Oh,
in
yes.
Their, you know, how early they learned it. I started working on the Brahms Violin Concerto at a rather later age. I mean, later. Well, you know,
it's
was
all relative.
Yes. I was 17 when I started.
Oh, goodness,
it.
Yes.
But you know,
but that is relatively late.
Right,
yeah.
Right. A lot of people, if since I, for example, comparing it with the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto, I learned that when I was, you know, 11, yeah. or 12.
Yes.
And there's something that happens if you learn. It's like learning a language before a certain age. You just, it's more natural, or something. Certain things you just kind of breeze past. Whereas if you learn it later, you kind of have to do a step-by-step process, which in a way, you know, tends to lead you to think more about the music.
Yes.
And then putting emotions on top of that, whereas the pieces you learn earlier is kind of just, you just kind of, yes, breeze through and you feel it more than anything. But then later on, you have to kind of rethink them a lot.
But of course, you bring more to it as well, I think, as you mature, inevitably.
Absolutely. Pieces grow with you.
There's a depth to the pieces as you get older.
Yes, yes. Your experiences in life, both on and off stage, add to that.
Mm. Who would you say has inspired you the most of all the great violinists that we can think of?
Well, I think of all time, my favourite violinist is David Oistrakh.
Oh.
For me, he is just such a deep musician, a true musician. And, you know, I mean, comparing to another one of everyone's favorites, Heifetz, for example. When I listen to Heifetz, I love Jascha Heifetz as well. And for some repertoire, I consider him, yes, he is at the top there as well. But, I mean, we're talking about all round. I'd have to still pick Oistrakh because when I hear Heifetz, I hear Heifetz. And unfortunately, I think that it's important to also hear the composer as well. And I think that David Oistrakh is a much more transparent, yet unique violinist.
Yes.
And musician. And so for me, he really, I mean, he does it for me, yes.
And what of Yehudi Menuhin himself?
Menuhin, I love his younger performances particularly. It's just so, it's so natural.
Yes, it's, I know what you mean.
It's like he's he's just conversing. He's. I mean, whenever I let's say try to explain what playing is like, especially in a, you know, teaching or something like that, I try to tell the other person. It's like you're talking a language. You're speaking a language. You're using your instrument to converse in different expressions. I mean. Mm. There's so many technical terms for expression, like color, like, you know, different emotions, the tone or whatever. But in the end, I mean, you pick the word that resonates close, you know, the one that you can absolutely understand and relate to. And that's what it is. And I think that the young Menuhin just absolutely had that from just a young age. I'm very envious of him for that because the rest of us had to work very, very hard and are still working hard to kind of achieve that.
The third and final movement of Brahms's Violin Concerto on Classic FM. And that's one of my very favourite pieces of music. The soloist was the outstanding David Oistrakh, my guest Ray Chen's favourite violinist, and Franz Konvichny was conducting Staatskapelle Dresden. Ray, if I could go back to when you were very young, because obviously you learnt the violin when you were at a very young age, what was it about the instrument that attracted you?
Oh, well, you know, I first started when I was 4 years old with, well, I had a toy guitar before previously, and one day I decided to put the guitar underneath my chin and together with a chopstick pretend to play this new instrument.
Oh, sweet.
So that was kind of... And in the beginning, it was just... I started with Suzuki Method. That was a huge kind of reason behind why I loved the violin so much. My teacher in particular was just wonderful lady by the name of Mrs. Hawkins. I still remember very, very fondly. Every Saturday, she would open up her entire house. And her entire family taught instrument, like music. Yes. I think her husband taught like flute and piano, and the daughter taught more advanced violin. The son taught trumpet or something like that. And it was just, you know, it was like their entire house became a music school on Saturdays. And I just loved going there, performing. That was where my love for performing really began, because we would sit in a circle and each person would kind of, we'd go around the circle asking who wanted to perform. And a lot of kids would be like, no, not this week, not this week. And I would every week just shoot my hand into the air and just
really
be like, I want to perform. Yes, me, pick me. You know, it was a bit really keen, yeah. And it absolutely helped that there was another boy also, similar age, who was a year older than me. So he was always slightly ahead of me. Mm-hmm. And the two of us, we were like rivals, you know, friendly rivals. We just zipped through those Suzuki books like, I mean, just like none other. We just went straight through them. And each week would be like, whoa, what piece are you playing? You know, what book are you on? Oh, are you on the gavotte? Are you on the bourrée? And then it would be like that. And then we'd go back home and practice. And you know, it's kind of actually, that's very similar to what happens in conservatory as well. Just a slightly different repertoire.
Yes. Healthy competition. Do you have eclectic taste in music, Ray? Do you like music other than classical and or other than the violin?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the only time when I listen to classical music is if I'm studying a piece, or if I'm, you know, like, and not necessarily the piece that I'm performing, but perhaps, let's say I'm playing Sibelius, I'll probably listen to a Sibelius symphony, or if I'm doing Beethoven symphony, or Beethoven string quartet, or Mozart opera, or something like that. Or so when I'm not studying, that's very, you know, that I call that my study hours, I don't listen to classical music. And I mean, yes, the range is very, very wide. It can be anything from Radiohead all the way to Taylor Swift. I mean, it's really, I find it very difficult to have anything against any kind of music. I mean, it's all wonderful. And yes, there is stuff I prefer, but you know, I mean, yeah, I do really like Radiohead and I do really like Taylor Swift. Yes. So there you have it.
Finally, Ray, what advice would you give to the entrance in next year's Menu in Violin competition?
Ah, this question was always really tough. Well, first, I think, is to play, not to play for the jury or anyone in particular, but to play for yourself, really. If you believe in how this particular piece should sound, Bach, Mozart, or whatever, it's you should play it the way you feel it. Because so often, you know, you might look at the list of the jury and think, oh, well, so-and-so plays it this way, I'm going to play it this way or something. But I'll tell you right now that the best type of performances are when I start thinking, well, that's not to my style. But then, wow, you know, when you convince me, despite it not being the way I play it, because that leaves such a stronger impression. So, you know, if it happens to be the same way, that's great. If it's not, convince me otherwise. And I guess good luck and try to enjoy yourself as much as you can. And yes, it's good. Looking forward to seeing all of you.
Ray, thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charlotte Green's Culture Club on Classic FM.
I'm Charlotte Green, and I'm really pleased to welcome Alison Balsam back to the Culture Club here on Classic FM. Now, you're going to be appearing at the Bristol Proms in July, I think for the first time. And one of my guests a few weeks back was Tom Morris, who's the artistic director of the Bristol Proms, who was full of enthusiasm about what he's going to be doing there. And it just sounds, his ideas are so innovative and visionary. Is that part of the reason why you decided you wanted to appear there?
Absolutely. Yes, Tom is a very inspiring character, and the way he thinks about music projects is something that's very sort of beguiling, really. Yes. The most important thing about Bristol Proms is that it is absolutely about the highest quality of music making, but it's just stripping away the etiquette of how to present it. That's the only difference. There's no kind of compromise with the artistic integrity, which is, of course, so important. And yet, what I think a live performance has to achieve is it has to move you in some way. It has to really get to you and make your spine tingle. And that's something that Tom, coming from a theatrical background, also is, he's bringing a kind of fresh spin to this concert world. And as you know, I'm always trying to find ways of presenting the trumpet in, I suppose, unexpected ways, because we do have a glorious repertoire, but it is relatively small. Yes. And finding new ways to package it is really interesting for me. The programme that I've put together was very much helped along by Tom, and just talking to him and just hearing about what other things have happened in the festival. And it's going to be very... very enjoyable, I think.
And it's a late night concert, isn't it? Am I right in saying
it's a late night concert? And
are you able to tell us what you're going to play?
Yes, roughly. I love to, when I do a straight recital with organ or piano. I do love to kind of stretch the historical boundaries. You know, play very early music and then perhaps something newly commissioned. So you know, wide scope in terms of dates. But with this, I think I'm going to take that to extremes. I think, why not? You know, people come in with their drinks. There have been laser shows. There have been things with candles. There have been things with, I think there was some stage diving once, I'm not sure, in a Handel Messiah, something like that. I might be changing the story a bit, but it's not what you'd normally expect.
Yes.
My programme, I'm thinking there might be an opportunity to play Tibetan trumpets, very, very ancient trumpets in the programme, and then also play a fanfare by Benjamin Britten, fanfare for St. Edmundsbury, which trumpet players will know is very much part of our repertoire, but it's a very good piece.
Yes.
And play some music from the Baroque period, play things that are more jazz influenced, and also probably at the end, this is in the early stages, you've caught me right in the middle of doing the, you know, early preparation, but we're thinking of looping, so you basically play into a microphone and then you loop the sound and then you play over the top of it. And I'll be playing with two other colleagues, trumpet players, Ross Brown and Adam Wright, who are amazing players, and also there'll be drums, and we're going to basically loop and layer all this music, which the composer at the moment is talking about being Stravinsky influence, and then it will basically become a big rave at the end of the 45-minute concert, and hopefully people will want to get up and dance.
I'm sure they will. It just sounds amazing. Really fantastic. I'm sure the tickets will be leaping away from the box office. Now, you also, to launch the Bristol Proms, you played a fanfare at Paddington Station at a time when there seemed to be an awful lot of commuters around. I just wondered what that experience was like and what the reaction was of the commuters to you playing there.
I think if you're a commuter, anything like that brightens your day just a tiny bit, doesn't
it?
It
has to. I know, I always felt
like
that.
Even if you think it's someone a bit crazy. It was a bit crazy. It was. You have to just sort of put your slight sort of sheepishness to one side and just say, yes, I am playing the trumpet in the station at 9 a.m. But it was fun. And I think it definitely did the job we wanted it to do, which was to say, if you get on the train here at Paddington and go to Bristol, go and see what's happening.
Yes,
it's incredible. And it's just a celebration of Bristol, really.
Did people actually stop and listen, or were there just a few bemused expressions as they passed by?
A few people did actually stop and listen.
Good.
Yeah, and we did have a little round of applause, which is always really nice.
That's sweet. And what's the acoustic like? Presumably really boomy.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Inside. It must be wonderful.
You can't have, for a trumpet player, you can't have enough acoustic.
Well, let's hear you playing now. This is the opening movement of Haydn's Trumpet Concerto in E-flat major on Classic FM. First movement of Haydn's Trumpet Concerto in E-flat major, played superbly by my guest this afternoon, Alison Balsam, with the German Philharmonic Chamber Orchestra of Bremen. At the moment, Alison, you're currently on tour with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, and I think your next concert is going to be in Leicester on Saturday evening. What are you going to be playing?
So this extraordinary piece is by Bramwell Tovey, a British guy who now is music director of the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. And he is a brass player originally, even though now he's a conductor.
I didn't know that.
And so he writes very well for the trumpet.
Yes.
And this piece is it's like a mini opera for the trumpet and the orchestra. It's about this very charismatic, very arrogant, evil personified man, sort of Wild West 19th century figure, and it's about all the things that happen the night before a huge fight breaks out in the Paradise Saloon, and I play various characters that appear in the saloon, and so do the orchestra, and really they do have so much to get their teeth into, which is great for an orchestra of the calibre of the LPO.
That sounds fascinating, actually. Now, another venue that you're going to be appearing at is the Wigmore Hall on May the 8th, and you're doing a late-night concert there with Trevor Pinnock. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes, this programme's very different from the rest of the music I'm sort of immersed in at the moment, predominantly because I'm going to be playing the Baroque trumpet, the natural trumpet, and playing music from the Baroque era, Purcell and Handel. And it's something I adore, and it will be a lot of music that I played in my show Gabriel at Shakespeare's Globe. And of course, teaming up with English Concert and Trevor Pinnock is always a real joy. Trevor being somebody who was one of my very first influences, that made me fall in love with classical music for the very first time when I had a cassette of his doing Brandenburg 4, 5 and 6 when I was very small, and I thought, I don't know what this is. I don't even know what classical music is. I don't know what Baroque music is. I don't really know what that funny tingly instrument is that was the harpsichord, but I know it's totally mind-blowing. And so to have a working relationship and a friendship with him now is just one of the great joys of my career.
As a member of the audience, I love the Wigmore Hall. It's a really nice, intimate venue. I wondered what it's like to play in.
It's totally wonderful. It really is one of the best acoustics. Every musician will always sort of single out the Wigmore Hall, I think. There's something quite magical about the space. It's quite intimate. It's not big, but it is absolutely perfectly formed. Everything is sort of quite close, you know, so it's pretty... it's a scary venue, but it is a wonderful venue, and it is always the pinnacle of the calendar, I think, for many artists.
That's excellent. Are there other favourite venues or quirky venues around the UK that you've enjoyed playing in?
Well, I have played at Wilton's Music Hall, which
is
fantastic. And again, it's the magic in the space.
Yes.
And of course, the Bridgewater Hall is fabulous. Leeds Town Hall, playing there has always been great because it's this big shoebox of a space that just absolutely resonates brilliantly with brass instruments. And of course, you know, everywhere that has a symphony orchestra is pretty big, you know, because the space that you need around a symphony orchestra needs to be able to resonate. And so that works very, very well for the trumpet as well. And as I always say, the trumpet is just such a great instrument to be a solo instrument with the orchestra, because it does have that absolute power where it can soar above, but
that's
it also can be quite subtle and intimate at the same time, and you can still hear it.
Yes. Well, let's hear some music by Purcell that will feature in your Wigmore Hall concert. Fairest Isle from his King Arthur Suite on Classic FM. Style from the King Arthur Suite by Henry Purcell. Wonderful playing from Alison Balsam. The English concert was conducted by Trevor Pinnock. And Alison joins me in the Culture Club here on Classic FM. Alison, how much do you practice before a concert? Are you quite rigorous in your approach?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm very deadline-based, deadline-driven, I should say.
Yes.
It's always in the back of my mind that ultimately, when you get onto the stage and you're under that sort of extreme pressure, you want to feel as prepared as you possibly can, because there is also that extra X factor, which is you don't know how it's going to be in that particular moment on the night in the show. So you want to sort of cover all your bases in advance. And for the trumpet, and for me, one of the biggest ones is stamina, which comes from correct breathing.
And on the day of a concert, do you have any kind of set routine? I mean, do you just... presumably you don't do too much that day because you're preparing for the
That's
evening.
Right.
Is there a set routine that you follow?
I do definitely make time after I've got up. I have to have a cup of tea first. Probably I have to have breakfast first so I'm not too weak. But then I really find the time, quiet time, where I can do a really good warm-up and I don't rush it. I couldn't tell you how long that takes. It just takes as long as it takes. Probably about half an hour. Can be sometimes an hour, just because you're just wanting to do it slowly and get the muscles working slowly without causing any pressure or bruising or damage, because you... That's going to come later in the evening.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Do you find after a performance, I mean, I don't really know because I've never actually played the trumpet, but do your lips feel really quite...
It's not really your lips, it's your mouth, the muscles around the mouth. Your mouth. Yes. Yeah, so it's really your whole face. So, and I have got to the point before it's quite hard to talk because the muscles that you use for talking are exactly, you know, the similar
same
ones.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I've been talking to Ray Chen on this programme, and he's obviously one of the very talented new generation of violinists. And I just wondered whether there were some really talented young brass players waiting in the wings who you're keen to see fulfil their potential.
Absolutely. Well, there are many, and it's extraordinary to see the level of the young musicians that are getting the opportunity to play, for instance, in the National Youth Orchestra of Great Britain. The standard is absolutely staggering. I'm actually astonished, I have to say. But the worry, of course, in contrast with that, is that are children getting the chance to start the instruments in the first place
that's
and have the lessons? And that's what worries me, not just me as a trumpet player and as a musician, but, you know, for our entire society, it's got to come from the bottom, from the first opportunities like I had when I was 7, 8 at my, you know, my primary school. If I was playing now, I wouldn't be playing now if I was at school now, because I wouldn't have had those music lessons.
That's quite a sobering thought, because just think of the talent and the pleasure that you've given to so many people that we would have lost. That really is sobering, and it's awful to think that children growing up now could be really talented if developed properly, and they're just not having the opportunities.
Yeah, I think a society is only as good as its culture, and I think we have to have a very long-term view about this. Otherwise, you know, as a small country, what else have we got to offer? This is something that we've always been able to be so incredibly proud of, this heritage, and I think it'd be very short-sighted to let go of it now.
Alison, this has been terrific, as ever. Thank you very much indeed for coming back again.
It's a pleasure, thank you.
Thanks again for downloading this podcast. You can find out more about the Bristol Proms and the 2016 International Yehudi Menuhin Competition at classicfm.com.